Chapter 34. Angus Greer, MRCVS, was never pretty to look at, but the sight of him propped up in bed, his mottled, pop-eyed face scowling above a pink, quilted bed jacket was enough to daunt the bravest, especially at 8 in the morning, when I usually had the first of my daily audiences with him.
"You're late again,"
he said, his voice grating.
"Can you not get out of your bed in the morning? I've told you till I'm tired that I want you out on the road by 8 o'clock.
As I mumbled apologies, he tugged fretfully at the counterpane and looked me up and down with deepening distaste.
"And another thing, that's a terrible pair of breeches you're wearing. If you must wear breeches to your work, for heaven's sake, go and get a pair made at a proper tailor. There's nae cut about those things at all. They're not fit to be worn by a veterinary surgeon."
The knife really went in then. I was attached to those breeches. I had paid 30 shillings for them at the Army and Navy stores and cherished the private conviction that they gave me a certain air. And Greer's attack on them was all the more wounding when I considered that the man was almost certainly getting my services free. Siegfried, I felt sure, would have waved aside any offers of payment. I had been there a week, and it seemed like a lifetime. Somewhere far back, I knew there had been a brighter, happier existence, but the memory was growing dim. Siegfried had been sincerely apologetic that morning back in Derby.
"James, I have a letter here from Greer of Broughton. It seems he was castrating a colt and the thing threw itself on top of him. He has a couple of cracked ribs. Apparently his assistant walked out on him recently, and so there's nobody to run his practice. He wants me to send you along there for a week or two."
"Oh, no. There's a mistake somewhere. He doesn't like me."
"He doesn't like anybody. But there's no mistake, it's down here, and honestly, what can I do?"
"But the only time I met him, he wet me into a horrible rubber suit and made me look a right chump." Siegfried smiled, sadly.
"I remember, James. I remember. He's a mean old devil, and I hate to do this to you, but I can't turn him down, can I?"
At the time, I couldn't believe it. The whole idea was unreal. But it was real enough now as I stood at the foot of Greer's bed, listening to him ranting away. He was at me again.
"Another thing, my wife tells me you didn't eat your porridge. Did you not like it?"
I shuffled my feet.
"Oh, yes, it was very nice. I just didn't feel hungry this morning."
I had pushed the tasteless mass about with my spoon and done my best with it, but it had defeated me in the end.
"There's something wrong with a man that cannot eat his good food."
Greer peered at me suspiciously, then held out a slip of paper.
"Here's a list of your visits for this morning. There's a good few, so you'll no have to waste your time getting round. This one here of Adamson's of Grenton, a prolapse of the cervix in a cow. What could you do about that, think you?"
I put my hand in my pocket, got hold of my pipe, then dropped it back again. Greer didn't like smoking.
"Well, I'd give her an epidural anaesthetic, replace the prolapse, and fasten it in with retention sutures through the vulva."
"Heavens, man, heavens," snorted Greer. "What a lot of twaddle. There's no need for all that. It'll just be constipation that's doing it. Push the thing back. Build the cow up with some boars under her hind feet, and put her on to linseed oil for a few days.
Surely it'll come out again if I don't stitch it in," I said.
"No, no, no, not at all," Greer cried angrily. "Just you do as I tell you now. I ken more about this than you."
He probably did. He should, anyway. He had been qualified for 30 years, and I was starting my second. I looked at him glowering from his pillow and pondered for a moment on the strange fact of our uncomfortable relationship. It might have been expected that some sort of rapport would exist between us, if only on national grounds, but there was none.
"Right, just as you say."
I left the room and went downstairs to gather up my equipment. As I set off on the round, I had the same feeling as every morning, relief at getting out of the house. I'd had to go flat out all week to get through the work,
but I had enjoyed it. Farmers are nearly always prepared to make allowances for a young man's inexperience, and Greer's clients had treated me kindly. But I still had to come back to that joyless establishment for my meals, and it was becoming more and more wearing. Mrs. Greer bothered me just as much as her husband. She was a tight-lipped woman of amazing thinness, and she kept a Spartan board in which soggy porridge figured prominently. It was porridge for breakfast, porridge for supper, and in between, a miserable procession of watery stews, anemic mince, and nameless soups. Nothing she cooked ever tasted of anything.